Welcome in to another week of Pick and Pod. Here, Miles Grossman, joined by Joe Henry and Chris Persiainen. It is the second round of the NBA playoffs. And guys, last night, the New York Knicks steamrolled the Indiana Pacers 121-91. And MSG, as we've talked about the last couple of weeks, was legitimately a whole nother body out there. So much energy in that building. I saw online, you saw Marbury being the AAU dad under the basket. It was good vibes at MSG. But Joe and Chris, I'm glad to be joined by you guys. Joe, how you been lately?
Look, I've been tremendous. Like, I've had a phenomenal week, and I think it equips me to be able to persevere through the things that have happened to me this morning. Because I woke up, I looked outside, I live on a cul-de-sac, and the town police are out there, and they're draining my fire hydrant. And it's filled up the entire cul-de-sac, which is like 8-year-old me. That was my dream. So I'm glad they finally saw the vision. And they, you know, it looks like a pool out there. So I'm like, what the hell's going on there? Can I say that? Anyways, I'm like, whatever. I filmed it. Go to take my shower. I'm in the shower. The water pressure, it's like, you know, in a scary movie when like the table starts like moving, the floorboards start creaking, you have no control over it. The water is going crazy. Like, one moment it's just dribbling, the next it's literally fire hose water pressure, and I have no control at all. Then I don't know
I'm
if
assuming this is painful, no?
At times,
yeah,
at least mentally. And then we have this like rack with the shower stuff, and I guess it was like it was scared too, because it just fell directly onto my big toe, and I was like, what? Come on, man. Like, just quite the series of events.
Jeez.
I'm busy cleaning it up. My hair's wet. I was about to wash my hair. I had shampoo in my hand when this happened. I'm in shambles, right?
That is disappointing.
And then the water turns brown. So I had to just
oh man.
That's what I was waiting on. I thought you were
yeah.
in the start.
Yeah. And now the water everywhere is brown. Like, I go to brush my teeth, it's brown. I'm like, all right, can't do this. So I'm in a bad way, but I'm in a good mood, so I'm able to.
That is unbelievable. I mean, this must be the first time this has happened, I'm assuming.
No, it's not an everyday thing. We don't usually have the fire hydrant being toyed around with.
That's unbelievable. Hey, and Chris, I know you might be a little happier. Your Knicks just got a 30-point win at home, and they're now one win away from the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, no aquatic acrobatics on my end. Just a very routine set of happenings. Knicks, absolutely dominant win. And I think it's the win that the fan base, you know, from covering the team, I can tell, has been waiting for.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing I want to touch on first with the Knicks is Jalen Brunson. 44 points, guys. I mean, the playoff run that he's had, statistically speaking, is unbelievable. You know, the back-to-backs, first time since yada yada. He's broken all these records. But you see a lot of flack on social media, at least in my mind. I think there's some validity to it, that the way he plays is pretty darn frustrating to watch at times. We obviously see the clips where he leans back, draws contact. That's part of the modern NBA. I get it. Do you think that these are a little bit of frustrating 40 pieces to watch, Chris?
I don't understand that. So you see a guy who's my height, 6 foot flat, using just like a litany of head fakes, shoulder fakes, hip fakes, ball fakes, right? Like, he is very shifty and crafty with the basketball. The whole crux of his trickiness is that, you know, he'll do the same move twice and get you, and then when he does it the third time, he'll go the other way. And he has this incredible memory of what moves he's used on which defenders, what they're going to do, what he saw on the tape they're going to do, and how to best them. And when you take a look at the stat sheet, right, you look at the fact that, you know, he took 35 shots and made 18. All right, so say each one of those was a two, he would have had 36 points. He had 44 points. Now, he did make two threes. So instead of 36, let's bump that up to 38. 38 of 44 points coming from actual field goals? What is the foul baiting? You know, like there's not.
I see your point. I think my thing is that
He was averaging 28 points per game at the end of the first round if free throws didn't exist.
what makes him special, though, as you said, is his ability to head fake, shot fake, and get the defender off balance. And that is a legitimate part of the game. Now, the only thing that makes it ugly to watch, it's still legitimate. It's still a legitimate 44, is the leaning, is the fake lean in. He's doing his best job to get the defender off balance. That's part of basketball. Once he has his defender off balance, he leans in, forces shoulder to chest contact consistently, putting the defender now in this illegal defensive position. But I got to give him credit. As ugly as it is to watch, it's shifty. It's shifty. No response there. I thought you were going to be like,
You said something true. Like it's
yeah.
like I can't understand, you know, if 38 of 44 points are coming from field goals, what the basis of the accusation is. How many plays?
But you don't think it's ugly to watch?
I think it's incredible basketball. I think it looks like he's got the magic wand, you
Yeah.
know, and very few guys. There's Luka Doncic. There's Steph Curry. There's a prime Chris Paul. You know, very few guys have that magic wand where they can collapse a defense at their will, where they can take an individual matchup of any kind and understand what they need to do at that height. Really, Chris Paul is the best comparison, I would say. He's like a more dynamic scoring Chris Paul. You know, Paul is a huge table setter. Brunson will rack up assists 7, 5, 6 over his last three games, but it's not because he's some force feeder into the post. You know, it's not pick and roll, spam, lob to Capella like Harden. It's wizardry.
I like it. And one of the other themes that's developed, Joe, throughout the last couple of weeks is the lackluster play of Tyrese Haliburton. And I know this was someone early in the year who, if the Indiana Pacers were going to reach their ceiling, he was going to be a key piece of it. And it seems that, after being touted as kind of this budding superstar, Tyrese Haliburton really hasn't been there. What do you think's gone down with Tyrese?
Well, first of all, I think there's something to be said about like playoff pedigree, right? Haliburton doesn't have the playoff resume or history that some of the guys on the Knicks have, and also just the play style I think is huge. I think I saw Chris, you touched on this on Twitter, like, or you retweeted, I think, a tweet. Someone said that Tyrese Haliburton spends too much time dilly-dallying, and I thought that was a good way of putting it, because when he's not at his most aggressive self, when he's really pushing the pace, when he's getting to the cup, he's kind of just sitting around the perimeter trying to make passes from there. And I think sometimes as a point guard, when you're an elite playmaker, you kind of get set on that pass first mentality. And that's something that we've kind of seen this series a bit when, like in game four, he had 9 shots, right? So you have a guy who's looking first to pass before shooting. When you're in the playoffs, your best player needs to be looking for a shot every time, even if he's a guy who's getting a lot of assists, like watching the Nuggets yesterday, right? Third quarter, Jokic had 16 points, then he finished with 40. He was looking for a shot every time. He also got like 12 assists, right? You need Haliburton to be looking to score first. If you're the team's best player in the playoffs, needs to be a score first guy. The assists will come, especially when you're as talented a playmaker as Haliburton. I think that's the issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And, just so passive. It was shocking to see. He's only 24 years old. And I guess, as a 24-year-old, you have to imagine that, first of all, he's going to get a lot bigger and a lot stronger over the next 2, 3 off seasons. I mean, he's not at his full NBA body. I think we kind of saw that with Jason Tatum over the last 4 or 5 years, that he's kind of grown into his adult NBA body. I think Haliburton's going to become more aggressive as he gets older, but right now, after being kind of the guy that was relied on to be the heart of a Pacers team. It hasn't been there. And Chris, I know you've been watching these games very tightly. You think that this is a New York Knicks defensive scheme? Does Tom Thibodeau deserve some credit for shutting down Haliburton, or has this been more just between Haliburton's ears?
Well, so the thing is that Haliburton, for a couple of reasons, is a bit easier to game plan for than other stars, right? So, yes, he's great at runners and floaters, high conversion rate on those kinds of shots. But when he goes and when he's driving into the paint, collapsing a defense, he's not a strong, physical, hard-nosed attacker. And so, sure, he can bomb you from 35 feet out. He's an absolute stud when it comes to connecting an offense, being the glue that holds it together, making the right pass every time the ball leaves his hands. But as a lead scorer, it's only game in, game out that matters when you're a star, right? Anyone in the NBA is talented enough to score 50, but can you do it? Can you score 25 every night? And for Haliburton, he's in this Carlisle offense that's so juiced up. It's deep rotation, lots of ball movement. I think he has an easy time making the most of that. And when it gets to the NBA playoffs, when things get tough, nasty, physical, he is not someone who you can lean on for primary scoring. Secondly, that jump shot, everyone always criticized his jump shot, and he came out and looked like he didn't even know there was, criticisms about it. He was just swishing and cashing in from anywhere on the floor. But I will say the longer load up time of his jump shot allows lengthy defenders, even someone like a Precious Achiuwa, who's not a huge big man, just standing at about 6'9". But it allows them time to load up and to contest it, to block it, to swipe it aside. That there is an ability because of the nature of where he scores from and how he scores from there to game plan for him. And so if you're a star that can be game planned for, you're not that top tier of star, right? You need to have the game breaking tool, whether it's your handle or your athleticism. You take a look at a Stephen Curry with the shooting and the handle. You take a look at an Anthony Edwards on the other side of the spectrum, the athleticism,
SGA.
the 99th percentile athleticism. Gilgeous Alexander, the length, the handle, the shot making ability inside the 3-point arc. For Haliburton, the mid-range is not a layup for him. And there's guys at his echelon, at his caliber, where that's the discussion. They can get to the mid-range, they can create. If the defense is in a drop coverage, they're pulling up and scoring. Jalen Brunson, right? If the defense is showing and the center's up, then they're making the dish out to the weak side corner. They're making the post dish. And for Haliburton, he knows how to make the right read, but he's not someone who's collapsing defenses the way that he needs to be. And then on top of that, when he's the scorer, it's game plan for a bull. Not a word. But it's a bit more simple with him. I think another example of someone who presents a similar kind of challenge offensively is Trae Young. Immensely talented offensive player, walking 30 points, 10 assists every game, right? But in a playoff setting, he has yet to do that damage, except for the one run to the Eastern Conference Finals.
He
Was
was
that
pretty good in the Celtics series too, but I don't think he has enough, but I do think he's a playoff guy.
right? And so the thing with Trae is that you can send two to the ball and pressure him into making a bad pass. You can force him to be the only scorer on the team. He's not making his teammates better. You've removed half his game. But Young and Haliburton, both immense defensive liabilities.
Well, one key that we haven't touched on in the case of Haliburton is the injuries. I feel like it's been kind of discussed that he's battling an illness. He's had the back spasms. He's had the right ankle. It seems that, he's also banged up, but nevertheless, he's going to have to. I mean, this is playoff time. We see it with Doncic that this is when the season's on the line. Haliburton is going to need to pick it up. And I mean, Indiana is favored in game six. That's the key. They go back to Indiana. That's a tough home crowd environment. Chris, do you th see your Knicks closing this out in six games? Or are they going to push it back to MSG?
Miles, before the series started, I said the Knicks would win the first two, the Pacers the next two, and the Knicks the last two. That said, I did not see the slew of injuries hitting New York like a truck. And not a fire truck, Joe, don't worry. And I do think that despite the injuries, I'm going to stick with that plan almost just for posterity's sake. So, New York in six, closing it out. This is a Knicks team that loves the road. They love treating it like a business trip. Brunson will show up in his suit and sunglasses, and walk out, like calm and cool and collected. It's almost like the anti Clyde Frazier, if you want to keep it within Knicks point guard terms. No flashy outfit, black hoodie, black sweats, Nike sneakers. That's it for him.
Yeah. I think that, going back to Indiana isn't going to be that easy personally. But in my mind, it's all about what kind of Haliburton shows up. I don't know if he has the legs under him to be that kind of superstar that he was in moments in the playoffs and mainly in the first half of the year. But Joe, I want to turn it to you. It's game six, Pacers, 5.5 point favorites. Are they forcing game seven?
I was surprised to see that they're favored by that much. I know that they've won both of their home games, but like that was a demoralizing game five loss. And I think not only is it concerning the inconsistent play of Haliburton, and he's going to need to be that first half of the year Haliburton in order for them to force game seven. Another thing that I think was huge for the Knicks and should continue to be huge for them was inserting Deuce McBride into starting lineup because the impact that he had, especially in the first half, on both ends of the ball, because he was guarding Haliburton pretty frequently. I think that, sticking with that, especially for a team that's been battered with injuries and that needs to find kind of a solution in terms of that three or four guy in the starting lineup, I think that they found that. And I think that the way that they played with him on the court makes me go with my gut and say that the Knicks are going to take this in six.
I hear that. And then, as we said, that'll be the Friday game. The Pacers at home looking to push to game seven, but that game five, pardon me, was last night. And I want to pivot to the other game that was last night. Just touch on it real quick. Timberwolves out at Nuggets. The Nuggets, another dominant win, led at the half. Finished off with an even stronger second half, 112-97. And guys, I'll be honest with you. When Minnesota was up 2-0, Anthony Edwards was looking like the next Michael Jordan. I thought Minnesota is going to steamroll him in four or five. And boy, was I wrong. I mean, Denver now in the driver's seat. I can't be the only one shocked. Chris, how surprised are you that Denver is now in the driver's seat?
A playoff series doesn't start until a road team wins a game, right? You're seeing that in the Knicks Pacers series. A home team is yet to lose, right? This series has been the exact opposite. Only road teams have won. And so when you take a look at Wolves Nuggets up 3-2. I mean, that is what teams that just have that history of dominance do. And when you take a look at the Milwaukee Bucks,
Up until last night, that is. Of course, the home team finally got the monkey off their
yes, of
back. Yeah.
course, the Phoenix Suns go up 2-0 in the NBA Finals. You got Chris Paul being like, "Oh, two away, finally from achieving my goal." And LeBron's in his Instagram comments like, "You got this, GOAT." The Bucks rattle off four straight. Now, I do think this series is destined to go seven. I do think this series is destined to go seven, but regardless of that, a switch flipped in the game that happened in this series. You take a look at game four, Denver Nuggets victory, obviously, any of the last three was. It seemed like in that game, Jokic figured them out. It seemed like in that game, Jokic figured out what to do. And it was the adjustment. I'm not acting like I should be on a sideline, right? But it was the adjustment that even people like me were calling for during and after game one, which is that in this series, you have to meet fire with fire. You've got to beat the unbeatable. When they've got three big men rotating to guard Jokic, I don't even have a comparison for like three monsters or three towers. You've got like Cat and Naz Reid, who are not defensive stalwarts, but who have real size. And then Rudy Gobert, whose calling card it is to be a shutdown, lockdown center. The way to beat a team like that is to have Jokic score. And for someone who's such a prolific, proficient, effective, efficient passer, a wizard out there on the court when it comes to finding teammates open, making passes to what looks like nobody. And then all of a sudden, there's KCP right in the shooter's pocket, right? Throwing an overhead pass cross court, and you're thinking that's going into the third row. Michael Porter Jr., catch, lift, three. And that guy had to flip the switch. He had to become a scorer. Because when Jokic is scoring and the defense has to absolutely, utterly collapse on him, you don't need anyone else to score 20 points. You've got him at 47 and 13 assists last night. He doesn't need double-digit rebounds. He doesn't need to be bruising and banging down low with the big fellas. He needs to be all over the court, unpredictable. You take a look at Joel Embiid's stud game three against the New York Knicks. A lot of those points came from three-point land. A lot of those points came from all over the court in the mid-range, getting fouled on the post entry. So for Jokic, it's about being unpredictable
And
and
also that
score.
playoff experience looming large here, Joe. I mean, it's pretty shocking that the Minnesota Timberwolves have their back against the wall already because they just looked like kind of the biggest machine, particularly at home in this playoffs. I mean, going back to Minnesota, that home court's going to be an option. Just what are your thoughts going into that one?
Yeah, it would be tough for Denver, seeing all the Naz Reid towels out there. But I don't know. I really liked what I saw from Denver, and I really didn't like what I saw from Minnesota last night in terms of not just defensively Jokic's ability to, if he had a guard on him or a wing, he's able to spin off of them, get to the cup, and then draw a foul from Naz Reid or Rudy Gobert. But even with Rudy Gobert on him, he's scoring. And I think that zone that he's gotten into these past couple of games, if he keeps that up, I really don't think that there's any team in the league that can prevent him from winning a game when he's on that level offensively. But the other side of things, why I think I'm leaning towards the Nuggets in this series, whether it be six or seven, is the Timberwolves offense, since they won game one and two, as it's looked inconsistent and disjointed, right? And Anthony Edwards this past game, he wasn't his fully aggressive self. The rest of the offense, like Naz Reid was getting buckets, but otherwise, like Karl-Anthony Towns was a total non-factor in the second half offensively. The smoothness with which their offense operates, it does not compare to Denver's. And even when you have Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. having kind of duds out there, when you have a guy like Jokic who can totally break the game offensively, I don't think that Anthony Edwards has shown that he has that same level of takeover offensive basketball in him for them to win this series. So I'm going to go with the Nuggets.
Yeah, and what stands out to me, guys, is just the sort of lack of cohesion over the last couple of games. What made Minnesota so special is, even when Naz Reid was inefficient early in the playoffs or Anthony Edwards wasn't having his absolute best game, they were still playing as one. And once they started to lose against Denver, man, they got away from that style of play. And it's been sort of uncomfortable to watch the way they've just kind of deteriorated in that sense. And I mean, part of that's just it's a make or miss league, as they say. And when you're not hitting shots, it's easier to speak negatively about how you got those shots. And I don't know. It just seems at this point Minnesota is a few years away. And after a few weeks ago, I would have thought, no, this is the year that they can make a dent. But right now, I stand at the stance of, well, Ant is there, them as a unit are not there. But before we wrap up our playoff talk and get into some Bronny James combine talk, I want to pivot to one of the more exciting series that we have in this playoffs, tied at 2-2. Hobble Luka in the Mavs really going at it with SGA and Chet, and really it's a deep OKC team at this point. I mean, that's kind of the late game tonight. That's probably the most exciting game on the slate. The Mavericks at the Thunder. Chris, I want to get your thoughts here. I mean, Luka is hurt. Luka would not be playing if this were the regular season, yet the Mavericks seem to have what it takes. A large part of that is PJ Washington. In my mind, PJ Washington is coming to his own. I don't think this is Linsanity. I think this is a new era. I think that, this is a legit PJ Washington. Am I crazy for that?
PJ Washington is doing what he needs to do as a play finisher. When you're on a team with Luka Doncic and then Kyrie Irving, you've got a star playmaker for others, a superstar playmaker and playmaker for others, and you've got a superstar scorer. Irving can be a play creator. He can be a play finisher. He's versatile. Doncic can be a huge scorer when he's needed. Washington and Gafford were a set of really crucial pickups for Dallas at the trade deadline. And you take a look at Daniel Gafford and what he's been doing the last couple games. Well, it's different than the Clippers series, right? In the Los Angeles Clippers series, he eclipsed the 10-point mark one time, and 13 in that final game. Now against the Thunder, he played 27 minutes in the first two, scoring 16 and 13 points, just 8 and then 10 points in game four, giving you 5, 7, 8, 11 rebounds in those games. And so for Gafford and Washington, I look at them as a duo, right? Because that was the pair of acquisitions that were meaningful for Dallas at the trade deadline. It's really on them to be the kind of team that can win major games. Those are the margin guys, right? You need guys who are going to be stars in their roles. And PJ Washington is on a ridiculous heater from 3-point land. I mean, I'm trying to do the math quick in my head. He's made 19 threes over the first four games of this series against the Thunder on just about like 38, 39 attempts. Like that's ridiculous, right? So for Washington, he's doing his job. He's setting up in that corner. He's catching the cross court pass. He's squaring his shoulders and shooting. This is a guy who I thought was, trapped on that Charlotte team that a good team should go and get. When the New York Knicks seemed like they were prepared to move on from Obi Toppin, I highlighted PJ Washington as someone who could really fit in their system and help out Tom Thibodeau. Of course, they signed Dante DiVincenzo, which, and we know how that's aged. An incredible signing for them, and someone who should have been a most improved player candidate had he not just barely not qualified for the game requirement. That said, with PJ Washington, he's a versatile player because of what he can do on the defensive end of the court, as well as play finish on the offensive end of the court. And I always say the power forward position in the modern NBA has a magnifying glass on swing skills. If you're a power forward who's a real stud shooter, you alter your team's offense. If you're a power forward who's a real stud defender, you alter your team's defense. It's the swing skill position in the modern NBA, the way that the modern centers play, the way that pretty much every single championship team recently has had elite guard play. I can't overstate the importance of the power forward position to the cohesiveness of a five-man unit and of a full roster that's playoff ready. For PJ Washington, he can fill a lot of roles, and he can fill a lot of those passing lanes too on the defensive end. And offensively, all he's got to do is just be effective, standing in that corner, and he's on an otherworldly heater. 5 of 11, 5 of 12, 7 of 11, and 2 of 3 in the first game. Absolutely ridiculous.
And the only thing that I feel bad for him about is that it's not a contract year. He's locked in to the Mavs for next year. But I still think that he's going to have a good year next year, and he's going to earn himself a pretty substantial deal. PJ Washington, 21, 27, and 29 over the last three games. That 29-point performance, that was really the breakout one. He shot 66% from 3-point range. Unbelievable. Or 66 in the previous, 63.6 in that one. I mean, it's just unbelievable what he's done. He's also that guy that can get downhill, finish in the low post, play some solid defense. When he's on, he's a legitimate all-star caliber talent, which he's never shown before. I'm excited for PJ Washington, and I think it's more than Linsanity, Joe. Am I correct that it's more than Linsanity?
I've always been a big PJ Washington guy, when Charlotte drafted him. And I mean, you look at the role he's played on Dallas compared to Grant Williams, who they spent a bag on this summer. It's night and day. But I still think
Everything
that,
they wanted from that original acquisition.
we're never getting it from Grant Williams, I'll tell you that much. But anyways, I still like the Thunder in this series, and it's because of Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving has not been out of the second round since he was a Cleveland Cavalier. That's crazy. He scored single digits twice this series. When you have Luka Doncic, who's banged up and isn't able to give you that consistent 35 a night that you come to expect out of him, especially during playoff time, if Kyrie isn't going to deliver consistently, I'm going to have to go with a Thunder team that otherwise seems not quite mature and ready for the moment. Seems like they need another year. I still like the Thunder in this series because I don't think the Mavericks have enough firepower down the line in this series.
Yeah, I think it's fair enough to say they're also. I mean, this is the team that coached the year one seed, seemed like this young cohesive unit in OKC, and it and has faltered at times. I think that the biggest thing that just the lack of experience, maybe the lack of physicality down low. But you know what? I'm still leaning towards OKC. But guys, I want to pivot over to my favorite topic of this episode, in that Bronny James has been cleared to play NBA basketball. He's out at the combine. A lot of people think that, some of his USC teammates who performed better than him didn't get invites to the combine. A lot of people are up in arms about the invite, but he's performed well, a really solid vertical. He also seemed to be that, legitimate pass first, versatile wing, 3-and-D guy in the combine scrimmage. So he's getting some love in that sense. But it's going to be really interesting what happens here with Bronny James. I don't think he gets drafted, but LeBron James is a free agent. And in the modern NBA, with LeBron being as powerful as he is, I don't think it's out of the question that LeBron is able to leverage his own free agency to get his son a two-way deal in his franchise. Now, in my mind, the most likely place for this to happen would be in Los Angeles. He's able to re-sign, get his son a two-way. And I think that those front office guys would listen to him simply because it's LeBron James. We see it with Giannis, kind of set the precedent with bringing his brother over to be that bottom of the bench piece. I mean, Chris, I don't think it's out of the question that Bronny James ends up with a two-way deal on his father's franchise. And I'll go as far to say that he won't end up in the NBA if it's not in his father's franchise, Chris.
Wow, harsh, Miles. I think Bronny James, obviously, the memes of like he didn't want to be LeBron James Jr. because he didn't want people only knowing him for his name. Someone was like, oh, like Bronny James, like who's that guy? Whatever. The jokes are funny, but the thing with Bronny, I'll tell you, obviously a huge draw for NBA scouts during the scrimmages yesterday. 2 of 8 shooting, 0 of 4 from downtown. I mean, you want to reward players who can show up in the moments that they need to. I remember the University of Santa Clara's Jalen Williams being a huge combine scrimmage standout, and being someone who just looked like a highlight reel of all of the stuff from his season-long tape. He was putting it all together at the right time. For Bronny James, one or two of those three-pointers goes a different way. He's 3 of 8 or 4 of 8, and he's got, 7 or 10 points. The three turnovers, the two steals, the four rebounds in just 19 minutes. I mean, it left a lot to look at in regards to overanalyzing this scrimmage tape. And I think you can do that so long as you acknowledge going into it, that's what you're doing, is you're overanalyzing 19 minutes of scrimmage tape. But, something that I guess I'll do a little bit of each. Something that concerned me was the fact that I don't think he's capable of filling an on-ball role at the NBA level. I don't think he's someone who can be a primary ball handler. I don't think he's someone who, you're hoping can come in right away and lead your bench unit. And that kind of reduces his utility in a league that's all about what can you do for me today. And the potential, players getting drafted at sky high slots because they're 2 years away from being 2 years away is starting to wane a little bit. For Bronny James, when he had the ball, He was so focused on making the right play. And you can't blame the kid. He's under a lot of pressure. He just wants to go out there and get those, my career grades up. But he didn't look at the rim for a good while. And that's something that you can look at and say, okay, it took him pretty much until the end of the first half of the scrimmage to go to look at the rim and try and drive to the rim. That's just something to put a bookmark in. Aggressiveness driving to the cup. You don't have to say, I can tell you factually that Bronny James cannot attack the rim, right? But it's more just about throwing a bookmark in it, folding the corner of the page down, and seeing what you can see in tape about that. Now the other side of this, the almost desperation to make the right play. Even if it took shooting it himself, he showed some really nice touch. Two floaters that almost touched the roof on their way up. This is a kid who does not have the height of his father, but looks like he's equipped to drive when he is driving inside to go in and get shots up over NBA size rim protectors. Also, playing all year at USC, playing off of two guards. Well, he was in that role in this game. So it's kind of clear that, despite whatever he may be able to do on the perimeter or with the ball in his hands, he's an off-ball guard. He wasn't doing a lot of cutting at USC, or to be honest, in the scrimmage either. So maybe that's something you want to see, but he has the facilities for it. He's got the game IQ to know when to fill lanes and crash the paint offensively. And also he showed like his handle was okay. So good touch, decent handle, ability to play off the ball, experience playing off the ball. This sounds like a guy that could slot in to an off-ball role in the NBA with some development. And then if you hope in time that he continues to bring the handle along, continues to bring the shot making along, he might be able to handle the ball a little bit, maybe a Monte Morris-esque role off of the bench.
Disrespectful to Monte Morris. No, I'm just kidding.
See, that's crazy. I really think James can play.
I mean, you're optimistic, and I do appreciate that. And one,
Mid to late second round pick.
yeah, I personally, I'd be surprised if he gets drafted. I think the most realistic way that he works his way into this league would be a two-way, and he'd just get signed as a two-way dude. I mean, I don't really see him getting drafted because of, well, first his size, or his lack of size, first, and also one of the major themes of his year has been the cardiac arrest. I mean, he just got cleared to play. He just got cleared to play NBA basketball, I should say. He missed a lot of the year at USC. And I mean, Chris, that's really the only reason why I can be as optimistic as you is because this is a kid who had went into cardiac arrest on the court and had to miss a lot of basketball time and then only recently got played to clear or was cleared to play at the NBA level. I mean, he's far from his ceiling, and the only reason why I feel that way is because of the time that he spent off the court dealing with his heart issues. But now that we know that he is okay heart-wise, I think that he might be able to tap into some G League ceiling. Joe, I mean, this is a LeBron James contract that's quite literally a player option. And I'm not really sure about how the calendar breaks down here, but you have to assume if the Los Angeles Lakers are just able to secure Bronny James in some sort of two-way or some sort of second round pick, as Chris said, which in my mind would be a bit of a stretch, they're going to get LeBron James to agree to that player option. That just seems like a fact of the matter. LeBron has been so adamant about what it would mean to play with his son in this league. It's really LeBron's last goal at this point. I think, as a centimillionaire, LeBron James starts to fade away from caring about championships and MVPs. This is his last run when it comes to NBA greatness. Be on the court with Bronny James. Joe, do you think that it's going to be a major factor when it comes to LeBron James, or is that kind of, am I blowing this up a little bit?
I think the media is always going to blow up a narrative like this because it's so interesting, but I don't think that that's absurd, especially the way that LeBron has talked about this as something that he really wants. But a quote that I find interesting, I don't know if Bronny James feels the same way. He said, "My dream was never to play with my dad My dream has always been just to put my name out, make a name for myself, and get to the NBA. I never thought about just playing with my dad. But of course, he's
Kind of
brought
the
it up.
battle Chris touched on earlier about, the whole name memes early on.
Right? So I don't know if Bronny, like, he's the other factor in this, right? Does he want that? Maybe he wants to not be on LeBron's team so that he can prove that he's an NBA guy without the help of his dad. You know, because you have Thanasis, he's in the NBA. That's cool. But everyone's like, yeah, he's only there because of his brother. I don't think Bronny James wants that title. And moreover, at the point he's at right now, I'm not sure that he's NBA ready enough to get a two-way deal on the team that LeBron's on, or any team, because a two-way deal, I mean, you only get two of those. It's a big deal. You want a guy who is NBA ready, right? You want a guy who's going to be in the G League and playing and be a star for your team, but who can be brought up and actually be that ninth or tenth guy when a guy goes down. Bronny James is a couple of years out from being that. And I think his size is the biggest factor in that. You know, at 6'1" in the league, you can't be an off-ball guy.
Yeah, he's not Jalen Brunson. He's just not.
And he shot 19 out of 25 in spot up at the combine, but those aren't looks you're going to get as a 6'1"
In
guy
slow
off the
motion,
ball.
too, if you saw the video.
Well, in a league with so many jumbo initiators, the point guard spot, the one position defensively, because you are what you guard, isn't being filled by traditional creating ball handlers to the extent that it used to be. I mean, look at the New York Knicks in the non-Brunson minutes. They have Deuce McBride out there, about 6'2". He's not someone who the Knicks organization even seems to trust to run offense at a high level. They were looking at guard options at the trade deadline, like Malcolm Brogdon. But he can be out there, especially when the Julius Randle is healthy. Someone out there is creating offense from a different position than point guard, and he does his job, 3 and D in the
And
one
Chris,
spot.
I love that comparison because I don't like the Monte Morris, but right there with Miles McBride, I think that is exactly the Bronny ceiling, if I'm being honest.
But the ceiling, I mean, you've got to respect the potential for some sort of on-ball ability. Ceiling is supposed to be ceiling. I feel like we've fried that term in draft coverage. You look at the NFL draft and everyone's ceiling is Randy Moss and John Elway and whatever. Like, I like a more reasonable take, but maybe Deuce McBride is like a 90th percentile outcome for Bronny James.
I just you're higher on him than I am, I'll be honest, because Bronny James, it's like, he was someone who, even prior to the cardiac arrest, which surely derailed his college career, and I have to acknowledge that, but before that, he was not this standout at USC. That was Boogie Ellis, right? Let's be real about who Boogie Ellis was on USC and who Bronny James was. Boogie Ellis got invited to the Combine Elite Camp. Did so well, earned himself a combine invite. It's just, let's be, I think we have to be honest in that we wouldn't even be talking about this kid if he wasn't LeBron James' kid. We wouldn't have heard of him. The only thing that's outstanding about his entire career is the cardiac arrest. He probably wouldn't have gotten even a USC look if he wasn't LeBron James' kid. I mean, I don't know how long this can go on where we talk about him like he's equivalent to these NBA talents when.
He would
In
have been a
my
great A10 guard.
How good are A-10 guards as opposed to NBA G League guards, though, right? We're talking about Kyle Rose versus yada, yada, yada. I mean, there's a margin there. And I think that Bronny could be an impact player in the A-10, and that's about where he's at right now. And I don't think that's too far-fetched. And I know that he's at the G League, but I think that I think his last name is Jonathan. How do you pronounce it, Chris? Ginvoy. I've only read it. Jivoy.
Man. Jonathan Givony.
Givony. ESPN Draft Express, all that. I see him on ESPN talking about Bronny James as if he's a productive college player. He didn't do it at the college level. The only reason we're talking about him is because he's LeBron James' kid. The biggest storyline of his college career was him not playing basketball due to some very legitimate health concerns. I mean, Joe, I'm over it with Bronny at this point. I know that this is maybe just me, but the fact that he's discussed as an NBA type guy is disrespectful to the other NBA type guys. And I guess the only asterisk to that is that You know what, Joe? It's a weak class. It's a weak class.
It is a weak class. I was gonna mention that. I think the what makes me less like upset that he's getting the attention he gets is because he's kind of like he's a chill dude. Like he's not like annoying. And like LeBron's talking about him a good amount, wanting to play with him, but it's not like LaVar Ball trying to get like LiAngelo Ball to the league. Like that was like, oh my God. Like just let it go, man. Bronny, like I'd like to see him succeed, I think. But he was a true freshman right here last year, right? Or not a true freshman, but he was a freshman last year. I think there is time for him, and I think that there's a chance he could carve himself a role on an NBA roster, even if that's just as a bench guy. But certainly he's not at the point right now where he could be realistically looked at next to these guys, even in a weak class, as an impact player. I'd be shocked if he was drafted. I know the Lakers have the 55th pick, so that's, virtually at the end of the draft. Who knows? Maybe they'll take him. But
Miles, you said it's a weak class. You're looking for guys that can fill roles. You're looking for guys that can fill roles. Deep NBA teams are all about having guys that are stars in their roles. I'm not trying to harp too much on the McBride comparison, Joe. I'm gonna let you get right back to it. But you take a look at the Knicks for 2, 3 years. Miles McBride was a third string player. It took the trading of two players for one, a guard and a wing for a wing slash forward in Ananobi for
and I'll be
McBride.
honest, I sort of wrote McBride off. Like, hey, I don't think he has what, I had that kind of brawny attitude towards him.
Maybe it's the diminutive size relative to a lot of his taller counterparts, but when the guy's got the dog, they got the dog in him, man.
But what does Bronny James have? Like you said that you want a guy who can be a star in that role. I don't think he has any particular facet of his game where he can be a star in his role. At this point in his career, especially like his stature limits him a lot. If I'm LeBron James's son and I grow up to be 6'1", I'm so mad. By the way, I like this poor kid. I think Bryce James is already taller
That's
than him in high
crazy.
school.
That's a fact, though. That's a fact.
No, I'm suing, man. That's not my father.
He happened to get the bad genes because his brother's around like 6'7", no? Already.
Right,
Bryce
Bryce
is
is a
about
real
6'6",
prospect to
but
look at.
yeah. But I mean, Chris, there's a lot that goes into this that I mean it the fact that he is LeBron James' kid, I mean, Michael Jordan's kid, Shaq's kid, all sort of didn't pan out. No one really took them seriously at the NBA level. It's proven time and time again, it takes more than nepotism to make it at this level. You'll see it where you might see a kid get a college scholarship because of a connection, yada, yada, yada. I mean, I didn't want to say it, but Wayne Franklin. It's like that happens in Division One sports, but when it doesn't happen, where that has to stop is when contracts are coming to play. And LeBron is obviously LeBron. He is the one of the goats of our game. Chris, do you think that LeBron James has enough to bring his son into the NBA? Will he have any sway in this matter?
I mean, listen, I think he's approached his free agency situation very intentionally. You saw him during the season putting on the Knicks towel at Madison Square Garden, trying to, everything that guy does is intentional, right? He's so media trained. He knows exactly what he's doing. And for LeBron, I think he's always trying to leverage certain situations. You see in Miami, he got Miami to draft, was it Shabazz Napier in the first round? And then left them anyway. Because he was tweeting out during the tournament that he
I
loved
was so high on
Shabazz.
Shabazz Napier, bro. He's too small, I
So,
guess.
he has that kind of sway in the Lakers organization. Their whole ethos is to star chase and to swap out stars for stars for stars, and keep the machine churning over time. But I think Bronny James has gotten the boost he's going to get from his father. I think at this point he's going to get into the NBA on the merit of his film that will determine where he gets drafted. Teams get paid a lot of money and from the TV deals and everything, and they're very specific about how they allocate that money to the uncapped areas of the league, like front office members, general managers. These are guys fighting for job security all the time. And if you're the GM of the Chicago Bulls or the Charlotte Hornets, you're not just going to go out and draft Bronny James because you think you might get LeBron. If you draft Bronny James, it's because the scouts that you pay a lot of money have really determined he's a guy who can come in and help your team get better. So at this point, I could absolutely see Bronny James ending up on the Los Angeles Lakers, but it would be because I mean, what picks do they have this year? I'm looking quickly now,
The
and
realistic one, as Joe said, would be that 55, or they'd sign him.
the 55th overall pick, exactly. It's like a safety valve, right? So if he's still there at 55, I'm sure the Lakers might select him and try and incentivize LeBron to stay with them. But in this draft class, he could go at 45. This is a class where your guys that you have ranked 18 to 40, if you took that order and flipped it just on its head, that could be someone else's big board. That's where this draft class is.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of the weaker classes in a while, and I think that helps Bronny James. A key thing to me is also that he's 19, and LeBron has been in the league for 21 years. His son is 19. I think that the ceiling is far from hit in the case of Bronny James. But guys, that's going to do it for this week in Pick and Pod. It's the heart of the NBA playoffs. Of course, tonight we got PJ Washington and those Mavs against OKC. Not Luka, not
How
Kyrie.
special is
It's
that?
PJ Washington and those
Big
Dallas
Kentucky.
Mavericks. But guys, it's been so fun. Joe Henry, Chris Persianen, I've been Miles Grossman. As always, Pick and Pod is a production of WFUV Sports.